Wayne Incorporated hostile takeover. Superman's grounded, waiting for the order. Rex Man, tooth on the mic, I'm Casanova. Cause now that Chris and Matt are back to bring the pain. This the podcast you play when you're waiting for the train. When you're walking to the store, when you're killing time at work. It's a show that'll destroy the whole universe. So awesome, watch as I spit Jay Ferocious. Two hosts with the most, and I'm Adam Warrock. Whether Marvel or DC, hip-hop or rap, it's like KRS-One's Return of the Boom Bap. Never out of style, and we're coming on strong. Even though every episode's a bit too long. If Flash Gordon dies before I wake, then the cops will probably say it was W-R-A.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax, the showcase of the immortals, the granddaddy of them all, the greatest stage in sports entertainment. My name is Chris Sims, and with me, as always, is the Texas Rattlesnake, Mr. Matt Wilson. Matt, how's it going?
Bom, 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 bom. It's going good, Chris. How are you? Chris Sims of the-isb.com and comicsalliance.com.
I am doing well, and as you can tell, I am amped up for WrestleMania, which by the time people hear this will have already happened.
Right.
So I hope it wasn't super disappointing, because, but right now I am in WrestleMania mode. I'm excited.
You'll have to talk all about it next week on the show and tell me what happened.
I certainly will. But today, we've got a great show for everybody. No third chair this time, but we will be getting back to our Ajax Hundo Club members. I believe next week, we've got some people lined up. But we've got a great show. Mr. Jeff Parker, the writer of Hulk, the writer of Thunderbolts, one of our favorite guys, is going to be here to talk with us. And as a North Carolinian by birth, he will be speaking to us about barbecue, I assure you.
Well, we've basically made it a requirement to come on this show. but as we're talking about the Hundo Club, we should probably thank the folks who have donated to us in the past week. So I'm just going to read off the two names so far, and that is Patrick Barb.
Thank you, Patrick.
And Luke Hare.
Oh, thank you, Luke.
As of this show, we have basically come to the conclusion of our pledge drive, but we are going to extend it for one more week. And Chris, do you want to explain what people will get if they donate this week?
That's right. This is going to be our last week that we are promoting the pledge drive. I want to thank everybody who's donated. Thank you so much. You have made it possible for me to get needles shoved in my face. Yay! Matt and I have a project coming out, our book, Write More Good, that we and the rest of the Bureau Chiefs wrote, is coming out on Tuesday. It is going to be great. My copy actually arrived today, and I actually lost like a half hour of work just sitting here on my computer kind of leafing through it and reading it. It's really funny. We're trying to get it as high on Amazon sales rankings as we can. So please, if you have not already pre-ordered it today and tomorrow, jump on that.
Yeah, but that's when we really wanted to get up there in the high numbers.
Yes. And it's actually, I mean, it's doing pretty well. So far.
Considering that, like we said last week, our key competition is Tina Fey's book, and she got two excerpts in The New Yorker, we're holding our own pretty well.
Yeah, we're not doing too shabby, but we do need your support if we're going to accomplish that. So please, if you can, it's like $8.30 on Amazon, and it's really funny. And there are a lot of jokes about The Flash.
Yes.
Surprising amount.
However,
this week we are offering, as a donation incentive, the person who donates the most to the last week of the War Rocket Ajax Pledge Drive, we are going to give you a copy. Now, it took 14 people to write this book. That's a lot of people. We're all listed in the back. But if you are the person who donates the most to War Rocket Ajax in this final week, you're going to get a copy that is going to be signed by me, signed by Matt, signed by at least one of the other contributors, and I will do my best to get as many people who wrote this book as I can to sign it for you, which is going to be difficult because we are never in the same place at the same time, except for me and Dr. K.
We could possibly wait to send it after HeroesCon when a lot of us will be together.
We could do it at HeroesCon where we could get you, me, Dr. K, Kevin, Josh Kroc, and I think Birdie is going to be there. Huge is going to be there. I guess that's it. And Ken.
So if you're willing to wait until sometime over the summer, sometime in June, we can get a whole bunch of signatures in there, but we can kind of work that out when we find the person who donates the most in the next week. So,
but it will be signed. It will be signed by as many people as possible, and probably not Roger Ebert, though.
Probably not Roger Ebert.
Not Roger Ebert.
Yeah. Speaking of signed books, I'd like to thank everybody for being so patient about the incentives. We are slowly working through the third chairs, the members of the Hundo Club. I am, with all great effort, planning to sign all the books that I have and get them sent out sometime this weekend to people who have donated to get a signed book from me. I know that Huge has sent out some t-shirts, and we'll definitely get you what you paid for.
What you've got coming to you.
What you got coming, yeah.
Yeah.
So hang tight, everybody.
I am doing the same. I have yet to send anything out, but I will. I was kind of waiting until we had a list of everybody so that I could do it at once, which I know is selfish. I apologize. And I know that our piece of art that we promised you from Jen Vaughn is on its way. It just needs to be painted. So.
Okay. So now that we have completed our mea culpas, let's check ourselves.
Let's do it.
Chris, what have you been doing this week other than reading the book that we helped write?
Than reading our own book. I got needles shoved into my face.
As you mentioned. So you might want to explain to our listeners what necessitated needles in your face.
Yeah, I have been dealing with TMJ disorder lately, which is basically where your jaw is not quite lined up correctly, so it clicks and gets really painful. And it got really bad last year, and then it kind of got better, and then it got bad again, and then it got so bad that I was like, yep, I have no health insurance, but I am going to go pay someone whatever amount of money I have to in order to get this fixed. And the solution was to have some needles shoved into my face, some injections into my jaw. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I did not consider the fact that having shots in my face deep enough to go in between the bones of my jaw, I was like, oh, that won't hurt after. But no, it actually hurts really bad every time I open my mouth, so... The things I do for you people. It's actually not every time I open my mouth. It's every time I open my mouth wide, like to eat or anything.
I think that sounds like a very specially designed room in hell for Chris Sims.
Oh, I would still talk. I would overcome it. But yeah, hopefully by the time this episode actually goes up, it'll be a little bit healed. Because right now it just hurts really bad every time I open my mouth. And that is basically all that I have been up to. Matt, what about you?
I have been keeping myself really, really busy lately. One weird thing is that I've been doing a lot of interviews lately about, for one thing, our book, but then also the content farm. And... I don't know if our listeners actually know this, in my day job, and what has been my day job for several years now, is I'm a new reporter, and I interview people on a daily basis, and it's very weird to be on the other side of that. it sort of gives me a little bit of sympathy for the people I interview. It doesn't mean I'm going to be any nicer to them, but it certainly gives me a little perspective when I ask someone, "Hey, what's your agenda?" Which is a question I don't have an answer to when people ask me that. The other thing,
what is your agenda, Matt?
Oh, obviously, just anarchism. I've also been keeping myself busy with writing, a lot of writing. Not only sort of just managing the content farm, I wrote a piece this week that I sent to McSweeney's that means you'll be seeing an update to my blog probably in the next month or two. I've also started kind of revisiting the script I wrote a long time ago for Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective, and trying to think about maybe getting that off the ground as a webcomic again, finding somebody to help me out with the art and so forth. So I'm just, you know, really keeping myself busy with writing and other stuff. I don't know. It's one of my, you know, big bursts of creativity, I guess, in the past week or so. So maybe it will continue. Maybe I will give up and stop doing stuff completely. We'll see.
I just want to say that I have always been very pro Copernicus Jones, Robot Detective.
I am really, really hoping it gets somewhere. I've been sitting on like the first chapter of it in script form for months and months. So maybe I can get it off the ground. We'll see. Anyway, let's wreck ourselves.
Let's do it.
Chris, I think you mentioned to me earlier that you may be skipping your wreck this week.
That's right. I do not have a recommendation this week. Although, you know, I continue to enjoy things that I've talked about before, like Pokemon Black, Dragon Age 2, and the My Little Pony Friendship is Magic cartoon. But instead of having a recommendation this week, I have an anti-recommendation, which means it's time once again for a little segment we like to call...
Chris, what's pissing you off this week?
Well, Matt, I'm glad you asked. As I've mentioned, we are recording this on the Thursday before WrestleMania. And I know that so many of our listeners are now rolling their eyes because it is time to talk about wrestling once again. Those of you who don't know, WrestleMania is the biggest event of the year. It's the biggest show. It's, you know, even when I wasn't that into wrestling, like in those years where I kind of, you know, faded in and out, I would always make a point to watch WrestleMania because it's you know, the biggest thing. It's huge. It's like your summer events in the comics. But lately, in order to fuel my getting amped up for it, Netflix has put a bunch of WWE stuff on Watch Instantly, which is awesome, and I hope that this isn't just for the run-up to WrestleMania. But one of the things they put up there was a DVD set they released in, I believe, in 2010, like just recently, called The 50 Greatest Superstars. It's a countdown, and according to what they said in the countdown, they pulled... The actual wrestlers, the WWE locker room, to find out who they thought were the 50 greatest, quote-unquote, WWE superstars of all time. And this list is bullshit. All right, Matt, you're not as much of a wrestling guy as I am, right? But you're, you know...
I have a familiarity with the world of professional wrestling, yes. Yeah.
If I asked you who the greatest World Wrestling Federation / entertainment superstar of all time was, like, who would be, like, your top three?
Ric Flair, number one. As much as I don't really think he was a very good wrestler, and I didn't really like him that much, Hulk Hogan probably needs to be in there. and probably like my third place would be like a tie between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin, probably.
Okay. Get ready for me to blow your mind.
Okay.
Ric Flair is at number 17, tied with Dusty Rhodes.
What? What?
That's not even the craziest thing. Here's the craziest thing. Hulk Hogan, the guy who's, you know, if you go to anyone on the street who, you know, who doesn't know a thing about wrestling and go like, hey, name a professional wrestler. It's, you know, you might, over the past 10 years, get The Rock. You might get Steve Austin.
Yeah.
You are likely to get Hulk Hogan
right.
from anybody. You know, probably the biggest draw in WWE history, huge draw for WCW when he went, there. You know, drawing people now, even to TNA, when he's like really old and terrible.
He's always been terrible.
Oh, he's terrible. he knows three moves, and most of them are terrible.
Right.
Like two of them are awful. But again, you know, he was super huge. Like if you want to talk about greatest superstars, not necessarily greatest wrestlers.
Right.
Greatest superstar. He's got to be, you know, in the top three. In this countdown, he is number 23.
I can, given that that was a poll of the locker room, I can almost understand that just because you're going to have people voting based on his wrestling ability. But the Ric Flair thing just totally blows my mind. That is sacrilege.
Yeah, I just want to say, people who ranked higher than Hulk Hogan, okay? Flair, like I said, is at number 17.
Right.
Dusty Rhodes is at number 17. And again, Dusty was a big draw. Dusty's great on the mic, has some of my favorite promos. Edge was
Edge?
Ranked higher than Hulk Hogan.
Okay.
Rey Mysterio was ranked higher than Hulk Hogan. It is completely insane.
The only thing that I can figure is that explanation for that is that, like, Rey Mysterio was in the locker room when they were doing the poll. It was just like, oh, Rey's great. Him. I don't know.
Do you think they took this vote out loud?
Yeah.
Those of you with Netflix should definitely watch it, but I do want to point out the number one, like the top three are Shawn Michaels is number one, who, if you want to talk about, you know, WWE, and he is a guy who stayed with WWE for a long time and consistently delivered great entertaining matches, great entertaining gimmicks. You know, his last couple of WrestleManias were phenomenal. Shawn Michaels, number one. The Undertaker, who I love, at number two. Number three, Steve Austin.
But, okay, Steve Austin at number three, yes. I'm glad to hear that Triple H wasn't in the top three.
He was not. I was kind of expecting him to be, but he was
yeah.
not.
But was he in there at all?
He is definitely on the list. I don't have a problem with him being in the, you know, the 50 best list. I actually, you know, I think Triple H is good. I enjoy watching him. But he's, I don't think he's higher than Hogan.
Okay. What about, Bret Hart?
Bret Hart's in the top 10.
Okay. What about
Which
Andre
I think,
the Giant?
I think says it all.
Yeah.
This DVD came out, in a time when Hulk Hogan had completely split off from WWE and Bret Hart had just recently come back.
Right. What about Andre the Giant?
Andre the Giant's like number eight,
I think. That's good. That I can agree with. Okay.
Yeah, but again, would you really put Andre the Giant higher than Hulk Hogan?
Personally, yes. But I could, like, it really doesn't make sense that Hogan would be so low on the list.
No, it doesn't. Not at all.
Yeah.
And I'm not even a big Hulk Hogan fan.
Right.
Like, I do love his insane promos, like where he said he was going to body slam somebody through the Trump Tower and cause an earthquake and then have to swim carrying Donald Trump on his back because Donald Trump would give up his material possessions.
But really, if we're talking about promos during that era of the WWF, nobody beats the Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, not on the list!
No, I'm not surprised by that at all.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by it either. But, I mean, Ultimate Warrior should have been on there.
Yeah, I mean, he was probably the second biggest superstar for a time in the WWF.
Yeah, maybe not top 10, maybe not even in the top half, but on a 50 greatest list of you know, people in sports entertainment, like wrestlers, like superstars, Ultimate Warrior has got to be on there.
Yeah.
Obviously, I would put Hogan, Rock, and Austin at 1, 2, and 3. I would maybe give The Rock the top spot because he was actually good on the mic and good in the ring. But you know, but apparently, on Twitter, Steve Austin, who is actually not only on the list but actually is one of the talking heads because they do it like one of those VH1 specials.
Yeah.
He's actually one of those guys. Apparently on Twitter he wrote, "I don't know the criteria for the WWE top 50 list. I disagree with 85% of it." So, there you go. Really fun to watch, except for the fact that Matt Stryker says he's quite possibly the greatest superstar of all time. About, I'm guessing, 40 out of the 50 people on that list. But well worth watching if you've got Netflix. I don't know if I'd pay the $34.99 for it, or the $20 at Target. But if you've got 2 hours to kill on Netflix, you could do a lot worse than to enjoy that. Matt, what's your recommendation this week?
Yeah, I have not an anti recommendation, like a real recommendation, and that is the show Bob's Burgers, which I just caught up with. Kind of this past week through Hulu Plus, which I just kind of decided would be my cable alternative, and along with Netflix. And that show is really funny. Like, I think it's kind of gotten wedged into that Fox Sunday night animation block that's so dominated by Your Family Guys and American Dads and Seth MacFarlane shows, but
you can just say shit.
Yeah,
we have an explicit tag.
But
guess who will never be a guest?
But I think a lot of people kind of slept on Bob's Burgers, but it's very funny and like a super talented voice cast with H. John Benjamin and Kristen Schaal. And Eugene Merman.
Was on it.
Yeah, she plays one of the kids. Eugene Merman plays one of the kids. It's really funny. Like, it kind of, in a weird way, takes sort of the sensibility of, like, a King of the Hill. In that it's very kind of, like, understated and low-key and is sort of a normal family's reactions to weird stuff and weird people, and sets it but it takes the setting out of Arlen, Texas, and puts it in basically Brooklyn. But the show actually like really works. It's really funny, and if any of you have an opportunity to watch it, I think there's a campaign on Facebook right now to kind of save it because it must be on the bubble. I would recommend anybody listening to the show to watch it because I think it's funny and I think you might too. So that's my recommendation.
Yeah, I caught the episode this weekend, and as always, I was working while it was on, so I only got to half watch it. And I know that John Benjamin was on it, and I heard Eugene Merman, and really, you know, anything with those two guys, I will watch.
Those guys are super funny. And yeah.
Eugene Merman did, like, I Very few times have I just totally like freaked out and gushed at somebody, but he was actually walking through the San Diego Comic-Con, and I like so embarrassed. I'm so embarrassed. I walked up to him and was like, "Eugene," and he was like, "Yes," and I was like, "Oh man, I'm such a huge fan. That bit you do about the band on MySpace in your Comedy Central special is like the funniest thing." And so, like, I thank God I did not actually quote the bit at him or anything. But, you know, like, he seemed a little weirded out. But, you know, like, and I felt, you know, like, I was like, okay, I'm clearly weirding you out. Enjoy your con. But, yeah, like, his, if you, like, again, it's on Netflix. If you have not seen Eugene Merman's Comedy Central special, he does this bit about a band on MySpace that's, like, the funniest thing. It's incredible. And obviously, you know, Delocated, he's great on.
Yeah. And, you know, Flight of the Conchords.
Yes.
Yeah. And, but Bob's Burgers, go watch it. Save that show. It's funny. All right. Well, now that we have anti-recommended and recommended, let's talk about comics. So I read a sum total of two comics this week. They were Detective Comics.
Yep.
And, I got The Walking Dead, but I didn't read it. So it's just Detective Comics for me right now.
Yeah, that's the only thing I wanted to talk about as well. I actually have the Jimmy Olsen special in my DCBS order, which will not arrive until tomorrow, but I'm predicting I will talk about that one next week.
Yeah.
But holy buckets, was this Detective Comics good?
Yeah, it was really good, and like it did a twist that I could almost assure you was coming in some fashion.
Really, I was kind of taken by surprise by the twist. Because it's a double twist.
Yeah, it's a double twist. I really don't want to give it away on the show. But
I think we can probably talk about it.
Okay. I was reasonably certain that they were not going to make Jim Gordon's son a murderer. Or at least not like really explicitly, evidently in this issue, in this flashback.
Yeah.
And yet, the reveal of what really happened was beautifully done.
Yeah, like, and I mean, before we get into to discussing that, I just want to say, speaking of beautiful, Francesco Francavilla,
yeah,
knocked it out.
Yeah,
like I'm a fan of that guy's art, but there's the double page spread of Gordon when he starts having the flashback. And he's kind of in the center driving, and you've got the panel set up on both sides of his face, is incredible.
Well, and that layout, he actually uses that layout more than once, and it's to really good effect both times, where it's like the present on one side, and it's the flashback on the other side.
Yeah, he does it a couple times, and it's, I mean... I like Francesco Francavilla, and I don't want to sell him short by comparing him to another artist, but it was like Francesco Francavilla meets Sean Phillips.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the painted Sean, like the Sean Phillips covers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he's listed as all the art, so he did the coloring too, it looks like, and it's just, I mean, absolutely gorgeous.
Well, but, I remember just like looking at that first page of Bullock. Sort of his little opening talk at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's got like a few different angles of Bullock right there on that first page. And like you could like that could just be like the prototypical image of that character.
Yeah.
It's like says all that you need to say about Bullock in one page of like three drawings of him.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's, this is seriously, I mean, you know, I know that I seem like I would be an easy sell on Batman, but you have no idea how happy I am that the best Batman comics ever are coming out.
But, like, this title is almost kind of like, and this is partially because this is the continuation of the Gordon backups from the first two issues that Scott Snyder did. But like this story is almost like sort of reminds me of Gotham Central. I mean, Gordon and Bullock weren't actually around in Gotham Central.
Yeah, but Batman shows up on one page.
Yeah, like, and he's like, we see Batman from their point of view.
Yeah, it's all Jim Gordon, and again, like the twist being that he did, like, the kid did not commit this one murder, but then still probably did all the other ones.
Or well, it's still very much unclear.
Yeah,
and also James Gordon Jr. has done
that. You know that it's unclear what he's done, but he's still like super creepy.
Yeah,
and the creepiness is sort of compounded by the fact that Jim Gordon, who is, you know, the for all intents and purposes, he's the man that Bruce Wayne wants to be. He's the guy that works within the system.
Right.
He's the one incorruptible guy in Gotham City. Was completely wrong. you know. The whole idea that maybe, you know, maybe Jim Gordon, maybe it was Gotham City turned Jim Gordon against his own family, is really, like, really compelling.
Yeah.
It is an amazing, amazing comic book, and it's the best Detective Comics has been in since at least Ed Brubaker. And probably will end up being the best that it's been ever.
Yeah. The only other Detective Comics run that I'm a big proponent of and like to push on people is the Greg Rucka, Sean Martinbro run. Like right after they came on the book, after they changed the cover dressing and everything.
Yeah.
To where there was basically no logo. And that book was published for, like, maybe a year where, like, the color palette was super muted and it really was a detective book.
Yeah.
I loved that run on Detective Comics. I like this one as much, if not more. However, I am waiting for it to continue the main story that Jock was drawing from the first two issues. I hope it circles back around to that after this arc is finished.
I want to see more of that as well. I do think it's interesting that Snyder had always said in interviews, and I interviewed him a couple times for Comics Alliance, you know, the plan was to always have this Jim Gordon backup story go in and then sort of dovetail into what was going on with Dick Grayson.
Yeah.
I kind of love that the Jim Gordon backup story had to end because DC cut their page count, and so now this book's just about Jim Gordon. Like,
yeah.
He didn't cut out the Jim Gordon stuff. He actually cut out the Batman stuff.
Well, as much as I like that, too, I do hope for the Batman stuff to come back because it ended on a cliffhanger, and the past two issues have mentioned it. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that crazy group tried to kill Batman. They tried to gas him to death. And you know, the kind of my reader reaction is to say, yeah, what happened to that? So I'm hoping we find out.
It's been incredibly solid. And if anybody out there has not been reading it, you really, really need to pick this stuff up. Even if, for whatever reason, you're not enjoying Batman Incorporated, which is the diametric opposite of this book.
They're very, very different.
You will enjoy this Commissioner Gordon stuff. I love Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, like...
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah. It is no coincidence that some of my favorite Batman stories are also Commissioner Gordon stories. Like Year One.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, you know, as I've said before, the Jim Gordon Jr. introduced in year one, never mentioned again.
Right.
The one element of year one that no one has ever gone back and done anything with, and now finally we're getting kind of a reason why.
Yeah, yeah.
But absolutely, absolutely excellent stuff. And that's really the only comic I want to talk about this week. I did read a bunch of other stuff. I finally read all of Punisher in the Blood by Rick Remender, and that was really good. And as much as I'm sad to see Remender go, he did a nice job sort of getting it set up for when Greg Rucka is going to come on and restart Punisher, which I think is going to be awesome.
I caught up on Iron Man, and this most recent issue was seemed kind of like some table setting or some throat clearing until sort of the next big arc. However, I did really like the idea of basically Dr. Octopus kidnapping Tony Stark and demanding that he cure him.
Yeah, I talked about it on when I was on Awesome by Comics a couple weeks ago. I talked about this one because it's so fun to see Tony Stark trying so hard not to be a dick and then just completely giving up on it about halfway through the issue.
Yeah, and him trying to explain to Dr. Octopus about how he can't really help him.
Yeah.
And Dr. Octopus refusing to accept that, and then Tony just having to finally say it in the dickish, most dickish way possible.
Yeah, it's... I think Iron Man's great. It's a hoot of a book.
Yeah.
And speaking of hoots... I think we're going to talk to a guy who has written his fair share of those right now.
Yeah, let's talk to our guest, Mr. Jeff Parker.
Joining us for this week's episode of War Rocket Ajax, we are proud to have back on the show one of our favorite writers, one of our favorite guys, another son of the Carolinas. So you know what that means.
Son of the soil.
Please welcome back to the program, Mr. Jeff Parker. Jeff, thank you.
Hey, thanks.
I like that you are acting as your own hype man on the show.
That's the best way to do it.
Now, Jeff, one of the reasons that I wanted to have you back on this week, obviously we've talked about it on the show. I've written about it for Comp Science. We needed somebody to fill a chair. But obviously, I have been reading and enjoying the hell out of Hulk.
Oh, good.
I think it's a phenomenal book that has taken a character that I just really, you know, didn't like or care about at all. And now it's one of my favorite titles. But one thing that happened this week, or I guess it was last week that the issue actually came out.
Yeah.
For our listeners who may not know, can you maybe sum up the high concept of the book?
It's really quick. All you have to say is, remember Thunderbolt Ross, the old Air Force general who used to chase Bruce Banner Hulk around, I guess presumably because he wanted him to come back and work for him and turned into a Hulk instead. He finally got too close to the fire, became the thing he hated. He had himself transformed into a Hulk in his mad quest to kill the Hulk, and now he's stuck in that role. And that's really all you need to know. You don't even need to know the details of it. It works without it.
Right, so you've got Thunderbolt Ross is now the Red Hulk, and he's basically doing like a lot of Hulk stuff, and especially recently, over the past two issues, starting with, was it 30.1 was the point one issue? You introduced kind of his Thunderbolt Ross.
Yeah, he's got his own
chasing
roster.
Him down. But in number 31, and this is the reason I wanted to have you back on the show, the Red Hulk, Thunderbolt Ross, goes down to Texas and attempts to buy some barbecue.
He was going to pay good money, too.
Yes. But there is a debate going on between people at this barbecue cookout. Which I guess for some people is redundant because barbecue and cookout mean the same thing. But
to some people, that's all it means is you just make something outside, but not there. barbecue is barbecue.
Yeah, so there are people having a debate over what exactly barbecue is. And that debate sounded very familiar, because I believe it's the one that you and Huge and I had last time you were on our show.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't even remember.
Yeah, you,
awesome.
You definitely did. You definitely had, we definitely went through pork, Southern style pork barbecue and Texas barbecue and what they refer to barbecue in your current home of Portland last time you were on the show.
Yeah, you can't get, well, at least where I'm from originally in North Carolina, you won't really make it through a month without that argument cropping up.
It's true.
There, it's not, there's no debate about whether cattle enters into it or beef, you know. It's understood in North Carolina barbecue is pork, but there it becomes about, well, is it this sauce or this vinegar sauce or is it this tomato based thing? You know, it's like, then that's where they will have feuds like Hatfields and McCoy. I like that Star Trek thing. If McCoy goes to the planet of Hatfields. But then when you get out to North, I never was really aware of that until one time I went with Mike Waringo out to a show in Texas back in the 90s. And really, Mike was the deal. I just got tagged along because I knew him. And we went out to some little town called Pflugerville, which really does exist. It's spelled with a P, P-F, Pflugerville. And there, you know, there was no debate. And when Mike and I tried to mention the kind of barbecue we like, you know, they didn't lynch us. But, you know, I could tell we dropped a little bit in their esteem. And as they explained to us how it could only be beef and blah, blah, blah. And then I realized it's like, well, this is pretty important to these people. Yay, you know who'd enjoy some barbecue? The Red Hulk.
Well, we can't. I don't think we
I
can
love
go.
That shot where Gabe draws him just biting into a giant rack is just the best.
Like, he's biting into, like, the bones, which is great.
Yeah, and he's sitting on the back of a truck, a Ford F-150.
With what is very obviously a pitcher of sweet tea in front of him.
Exactly, and a big bowl of slaw.
But we can't, I don't think we can go a week on this show without talking about barbecues, so you're in welcome territory, I guess.
We've met our quota.
Yeah,
I'm glad that, first of all, I love the exchange between the guy in the cowboy hat who says barbecue is cow, and the guy responds with, where I'm from, it's pork, son.
Well, if you go back and look at, I bet you didn't notice this, go back and look at their belt buckles. The guy who says it's cow is wearing a Texas-shaped belt buckle, and the guy who says it's pork is wearing a North Carolina belt buckle.
That is amazing.
So I'm tired of people saying we're not putting detail and thought into these comics, because we are. We are putting stuff in there. Nothing hurts me more than watching people miss all the brilliant crap we put in all the time. They just overlook it. All they think about is, did he fight Abomination? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, look at the rednecks. Look at the rednecks.
I think we have our episode title. Look at the rednecks.
Yep.
I also like that, I think for the first time, Lexington-style barbecue sauce is now in Marvel continuity.
Yeah, that's right. It'll probably, yeah, the handbook guys will probably do a little write-up on it.
I really want there to be an official handbook entry for Lexington-style barbecue sauce.
Lexington-style barbecue sauce.
And I believe Matt Wilson is available as a consultant.
Hey, well, Chris, that reminds me. Speaking of things that, like, only you are noticing, are you reading Thunderbolts?
I am, but I am a couple issues behind.
Ah, crap. Did you read the Man-Thing issue?
I have not yet.
I read that issue.
Okay. This is where, okay, Matt, you have the information, but Chris would be the one who would recognize who these characters are. Did you see the Federal Advisory Committee to the Thunderbolts, the people who come in and do the inspection?
Yes.
No, I didn't, obviously.
Well, okay. Anyway, they're a black guy, a white guy, and a white woman, and their names are Kel, Marin, and Lloyd, or is it Doyle? God, now I've screwed it up. There are three characters that Chris really loved from something else.
Is it the Continuiteens?
It is.
Awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. And now you get to see what the Continuiteens do as 40-some-year-old people.
That is.
They decide who the Thunderbolts are.
That is awesome. For our listeners who might not know, because very, like, not nearly as many people as should have actually read Age of the Century. Although, if you are listening to this show, you probably read it because you have impeccable taste, clearly.
And not just Age of the Century. It's where they really turned up first was an X-Men first class. It was Nick Dragotta drew that issue, and that was the one where VP of Marketing David Gabriel just swore I would never get those characters through again. He was so mad at that story. They're like, oh, now I've got to get them in somewhere else.
Well, I'm glad to see him back because I loved you know, that's something that you've done, and also Dan Slott kind of built on that same idea in She-Hulk when he had the guys that were down in the Goodman Lever, Kurtzberg, yes, and Holloway in the basement with their Comics Code approved legally documented comics. They used as evidence in all their trials. But yeah, again, I'm a couple issues behind, but I am really enjoying Thunderbolts, which is a beautiful book as well.
It doesn't look gorgeous.
Yeah, it's Declan Shalvey.
Perfect combo of Kev Walker and Frank Martin. They just work together so well.
And Declan Shalvey is doing work on that book as well, right?
You mean that Irishman I captured in a field and told him that he had to draw my comic books?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes, he tried to make me take his gold and went, oh no, little man. You're going to draw Marvel superheroes. And he's had to ever since.
Now, you've been on the show before several times. I do want to ask you a quick follow-up question from one of your previous appearances. Okay. It is, when this goes up, it is early April. We're recording this on the last day of March, so winter is over.
Jeff, yay.
You are originally from North Carolina, but now you live in a northern clime. You live in in that hot comics town of Portland.
Yep.
Did you enjoy snow cream this year?
No. We didn't get any snow. We didn't get enough snow to make snow cream. It was really, really a downer.
That's really surprising.
I should have. Well, it's also though we're surrounded by mountains. All I have to do is drive out of town an hour, and I could have brought back enough snow. But that seemed like work. I like it to just fall out of the sky on me, and then I get my eggs and vanilla and whatever.
That kind of ruins the novelty of snow cream, which, you know, you just go into your backyard and you get to the snow and then you make it.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it's like, yeah, and God gave you ice cream.
Well, Jeff, now that we have discussed barbecue and snow cream.
We've got a whole meal going.
I think that I would actually like to talk a little bit about comics, if that's all right with you.
Fine. Let's talk about comics.
Obviously, we've talked a little bit about the Hulk, and I want to talk about the Hulk a little bit later. But you talked about Thunderbolts a little bit. Again, I'm a couple issues behind, going to be honest. Sorry, everybody. But I am a big fan.
Trade waiter.
I'm not even waiting for the trade. I'm waiting. I have a stack of comics that I haven't read. Not even waiting for the trade. But you took over Thunderbolts fairly recently. Has it been a year? It's been a little bit over a year, right?
It's been more than a year. I was looking through my my files on my computer the other day. And I was looking back for something. Somebody wanted an older script to draw from, and I'll do that a lot of times if people ask. Here's a script. Go do some sample pages. And I looked back and saw all the ones I'd written, like, wow, I've actually been writing this book for a while now. It kind of went fast.
Yeah, I always sort of forget that you did that arc with the the Ghost and Nuke and those guys against the Agents of Atlas before they kind of got, the new direction with Luke Cage and Man-Thing and everybody. But yeah, you've been on that book for a while.
Yeah, and it's kind of, and I understand that. It's like everybody kind of counts my run as when Kev comes on. And I kind of do too, because as far, I was really just finishing Andy Diggle storylines at those point. Like, hey, Andy, what do you think you were going to do with this? And then I was like, well, if I were Andy Diggle, what would I do? And, it's like he was overwriting Daredevil. So that was actually kind of cool, though, because it sort of gave me a little practice time working with the book. And then when it kind of becomes showtime, when they say, okay, you can relaunch with a new direction, I'm like, yes, and then Kev and I redesign everybody and do all this stuff. And somehow Bill Roseman goes and gets Man-Thing for us. And we're like, we can't lose,
Man-Thing is the draw. He's the Wolverine, the Fonzie of that book.
I mean, just think of this. How long's Man-Thing been around? Almost 40 years. Never been on a big team book. But now, finally, in the 21st century.
I just hope
Andy's got some good stuff coming up in Fear Itself. It's going to be a very Man-Thing sort of thing.
I would be really shocked and disappointed if there was a crossover called Fear Itself and Man-Thing was not part of it.
No, there is totally a place for Man-Thing and Fear Itself.
But Thunderbolts is a book that, since it was created, by, I guess, Kurt Busiek and Mark Bagley, right?
Yes.
In the aftermath of the world-shattering, nothing will ever be the same, Heroes Reborn. It's been a lot of different things. You had the sort of original thing that was the villains masquerading as superheroes, and then it was sort of the villains becoming superheroes in their own right. And then, obviously the Warren Ellis sort of
just
direction.
Horrible people.
Yeah, it was just about miserable, horrible people. And then, Andy Diggle's run where they were kind of the evil, the evil strike force for Norman Osborn.
Andy had a really tough road to hoe too, because he was kind of given the book right when, okay, and everybody else is also the Thunderbolts. So, it's like...
Yeah, well, it's because the Thunderbolts that were the Thunderbolts became the Dark Avengers at that
point. Yeah, they become the Dark Avengers. So, and then that's the whole thing where all the bad guys are sort of taking over and getting into society in it. So it's like, it's kind of hard to be the, now, and this is the book where the bad guys are in charge. So that was kind of, I feel a little bad for him on that.
Yeah, no doubt. And I want to get into that a little bit later, because I feel like that's...
And then I get it, and I get Luke Cage. Yay!
I feel like that's sort of the position that you were in with the Hulk as well. But while we're talking, on Thunderbolts, it had been a lot of different books. There have been a lot of different directions. And then you come on, you finish up, as you said, the sort of Andy Diggle's run. That was very stylistically identifiable as Andy Diggle's run. It had those, had those very distinctive covers. When Kev Walker came on, the logo changed, I believe.
Yeah. It turns to the stencil logo.
So why did you decide to take it in the direction that you did? I know that there have been inevitable comparisons to Suicide Squad, which is one of, my favorite comics, one of the best series of all time, really.
Yeah, I always liked Suicide Squad. It wasn't actually my idea to do it out of the prison. That was, I think, something that came up at a summit, and probably Brevoort was wanting that. And when they first suggested it to me, I was kind of like, I don't want to draw a prison book, because I was thinking of just a book. At the moment, everybody kept talking about the prison, and I was thinking, boy, I really don't want to write this Oz and comics thing, it's like, and then when I realized, it's like, oh, what are they going to do once I do actually write it and I do whatever I want? So, yeah, you know, so like, it also made sense that it's like, well, then here you got this home base, and whenever Luke needs somebody for a specific job, we can go tap someone, so we can get all kinds of neat possibilities out of that, like when they pull Hyperion in. And, you know, then I started getting excited about it. And then once Kev started drawing it, I got really excited about it because it just went through the roof. It was just such, I mean, it's just been a gorgeous thing to look at, seeing in my inbox week after week coming together. And then, you know, then I found out Declan was, like, interested in drawing some stuff, and he was doing 28 Days Later, I think. And I said, well, can I let me show your stuff to Bill Roseman. Because I think you'd really fit in here, and it's like we're going to run Kev into the ground if we don't give him a break once in a while. You know, so, and I think that's really worked, alternating those two guys, because they just both fit like gloves, like bat gloves. That's for you because you're a Batmanologist.
Thank you for just adding the word bat to a word for my benefit. One of the things I think that's interesting, both in Hulk and Thunderbolt, is that they're set up in such a way, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that you're a guy who loves the Marvel Universe. And I know that a lot of, like, probably everybody working at Marvel Comics loves the Marvel Universe, but, you know, there's, in stuff by you, by Dan Slott, by Tobin, you know, Fraction, you can see that they love, you know, you can see that these are guys who are like me and Matt that grew up and reading the official handbook and kind of putting pieces together of stuff. So it feels like in both Thunderbolts, with the way that it's set up, like you mentioned with the prison, where you can essentially in, you know, two or three lines of dialogue, recruit whoever you want for that team, you know, whatever villain you want. And, in Hulk, where, as I mentioned, you've got the big never-ending death traps or never-ending doomsday scenarios, you've given yourself these two big playgrounds for the Marvel Universe where you can pull in stuff that's not necessarily, you know, elements from basically anywhere in the Marvel Universe. You can pull in some way in these two books.
Well, yeah, both those books work that way, where some of them, it's like, we'll see, because I, you know, I think, like, MODOK can't show up just anywhere, you know, even though now I wish you could see some of the stuff we're working on now that's not going to be out for several months, where the new MODOK is interacting with everybody, and instead of being the old screaming, floating around in a hidden base all the time, he actually goes out and kind of mixes it up. He's the MODOK of the people. And you know, that's what I wanted to do that with his new incarnation, because I didn't want him to always be stuck in this same kind of environment. I wanted to just like, well, let's expand what MODOK can do a little bit. And now he's such a pleasure to write. It's so much fun to write him. Because he can make a joke. You know, it's like, hey, good one, MODOK. You know, he'll just suddenly he'll get a little clever on you. And you know, and he may not just always think about conquering the world. He may just want to screw with somebody. And that's the kind of, but yeah, Hulk, for some reason, I don't know why that book in particular, but it leaves you open to deal with almost anything. You can get as serious and realistic as you want, or you can get as fantastic and nutty as you want with that. And that's kind of that's where I'm comfortable with a gigantic range of things to do.
Is it ever, you know, Obviously, you know, you're a guy who enjoys that, having all those possibilities and having that ability to pull stuff in. But is it ever overwhelming for you, considering that, you know, that you've given yourself so much stuff to potentially play with? Or do you just, you know, is it just a matter of picking and choosing the stuff that you want to work with that month?
You know what, I do a whole lot, and I try to convince other writers to do this, and I don't know how many of them listen, but I generally always ask the artist who I'm working with, like, what would you like to draw? What kind of story do you feel like doing? And, you know, like, you wouldn't believe, it's kind of sad how many people won't ask their opinion, Because if you did, you may get an artist coming back saying, you know, I really don't want to draw Superman walking around America lecturing people all the time. That might happen. So a lot of, you know.
Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetically, I'm just making up a character like this Superman I just came up with. But hey, 10-year-old, you tell those drug dealers. They better clean up their I'm sorry, that just made me so mad.
You are not alone, I don't think. You are not alone on this phone call.
I was like, oh, I won't get into it. I shouldn't be bashing other people's books or whatever. I just love Superman a lot. Anyway, and I like seeing him hit people. That's just this weird thing I got. And, I just generally will ask the artist, like, what kind of stuff? I at least give me a wish list or something. And, they'll come back. I'm going to be working with Patrick Zercher on a storyline in Hulk coming up, so we can give Gabe a break because he's been like storyboarding movies and drawing this book at the same time somehow. I guess he just doesn't sleep. And Zercher really got into it. He came roaring back with whole plot lines and characters and stuff. And I'm like, holy gosh, man, this is great. You know, I got stuff to pick from. So it kind of creates parameters for you. It doesn't kind of, it does create parameters. And then the artist feels invested, and you're really doing a true collaboration at that point. You know, you're not just sitting there going, here, pencil monkey, draw this thing. You know, it's like, it shouldn't be that way. And since I was on the other side of it all the time, getting scripts for years, you know, I'm kind of hyper aware of that.
Yeah, you also come from a background where you're an artist as well as a writer.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I used to get a script where the writer didn't necessarily even know who the artist was going to be and stuff. And, you know, it's like I did the best I could, but I always felt like if I had some input, it would have just been a lot better. You can tell the difference. You can really tell where an artist has just gotten a script that's been sitting around and then it's handed to that they're assigned to it, or one where the artist and writer went back and forth in email or on the phone. It just clicks together. It just has that kind of, I'm not going to say verisimilitude again. I say it in every interview and I'm sick of saying it, but it has that little dynamic that you miss when there's not a real collaboration going. And anyway, that's what I do all the time. It's most of the time artists do have opinions about what they would like to draw.
My artists have too many opinions.
I know. Where do they get all these opinions?
Well, Jeff,
they'll be winning money.
Speaking of a collaboration, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about Bucko.
Okay.
Because, like, we talked about, you know, all your work at Marvel and with superheroes and that kind of stuff, and usually...
Now you've moved into filth. Just absolute filth.
Well, you know, usually
that's
when...
That's where Erica Mowen drags people. You go right down.
You know, a lot of times when you think about comics writers and artists, once they get to that level where they're at a major publisher, you don't think about them starting a webcomic. And that's what you've done. So I'm just kind of curious what, you know, got you and Erica to start doing this kind of comic. Is it just because it's something different? Or where did it all come from?
Well, yeah, it gives me an outlet to do stuff that, believe it or not, Marvel won't let me do. they won't say, hey, do something about this bike shop where... people defile the bicycles and stuff like that. Never comes up.
You put a North Carolina-shaped belt buckle and a discussion of Lexington-style sauce into a Hulk book, and you're telling me there are things that they won't let you do?
There's a limit everywhere. And but anyway, that came about because Erica was reading, even though she had just joined the studio, and she started reading Mysterious that Tom Fowler and I did. And she was really into that book, and she was just telling somebody somewhere that she'd like to work with me. And someone was asking if she'd ever like to work with someone else, and she mentioned me because of that. And of course, like every big ego creator. I've got the Google alert looking for my name all the time. It always pops up when I log on. And I was like, oh, what's Erica talking about? Talking trash about me, is she? And then so I go and check it out. I'm like, oh, okay, we can work on something. And she at the time really wanted to get away from doing bio comics. You know, she had, it wasn't, Dara wasn't a straight bio comic, but it was enough elements of her life that she was starting to feel uncomfortable with everybody like, hey, I'm a big fan friend of yours. You know, they're you've seen this at shows. People blur the lines quite a bit, especially when you invest yourself in something that way. So I went, yeah, let's just do fiction. We'll do this. And then, of course, I still surreptitiously make it all about her anyway. So I don't know that it still doesn't count as a bio comic. It's just, I don't know, this Jip character looks a lot like Erica and has some Erica-isms going on. But
lives in Portland.
A lot of it is completely built out of, you know, we've got one big common room in the middle of the studio in between two sections of the studio. And in there is where all the most heinous things are always said. And I was just kind of like, we're just wasting material here. This is great stuff. Or at least it is to me. And if Eric is willing to draw it, you know, that's where we pretty much generate everything.
Well, it is. It's been highly enjoyable. I've really, really enjoyed it. Again, for our listeners who may not have checked it out yet, it's at buckocomic.com. Right?
Yeah.
And can you just give us a quick summary of the events thus far? The filthy, filthy events thus far?
It's not that filthy. It's more, if you're into like Flight of the Conchords, you might like it. You know?
It's actually not that filthy at all. I'm just...
Yeah, every time it's about to get filthy, it gets headed off somehow. That's...
Isn't that funny?
Every time it's about to get sexy, someone gets stabbed in the neck.
Exactly. It's Erica called it a dick and fart joke murder mystery, which is a pretty good tag to put on it. It kind of grew out of this hypothetical I posed one day where I said to the room, it's like, what if you had, say, like some bowel issues just hit you really hard? And it's one of those times where you go charging for the bathroom and you're fumbling with keys. You've got to get in there. Or something horrible is about to happen outside of the bathroom. And then you break in, and then suddenly there's a dead body lying on the floor. Now, you don't suddenly not have to go to the bathroom. That didn't just go away. And it's like, you know, and then I kind of thought about that. It's like, I don't know why I was on that track that day. But then I thought, well, surely anybody would think, okay, I'm going to completely report this after I take my dump. And then, of course, what happens in the strip is Bucko sits down. He's at a job interview. And it, suddenly a night of drinking all kinds of real swill has just kind of attacked him. And he has to essentially lose his job. It was just going to be a crappy, you know, like a call service job anyway. He was just going to be on phones all day. So, but he goes running out in the middle of the interview, which never looks good, goes to the bathroom, barely makes it in, and there's a guy with a knife sticking out of his neck lying on the floor. And he only gets a second to pause to think about it, and then he still sits down to relieve himself, and then another dude walks in. So naturally, the next thing, Bucko's down at the police station, you know, because it's like, who is this guy who's just calmly sitting around on the toilet while a dead body's in front of him? And then that's kind of where the whole thing builds from there. And then for some reason, Bucko also thinks everybody wants to hear about the night before. So when the cops are interviewing him about it, you know, he backs all the way up to, I met this girl at this bar, and this band called The Fixies were playing, where they stand on fixed gear bicycles while they sing old Pixie songs, and blah, 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 blah.
Which, by the way, Benito Soreno had to explain the joke to me for that one.
I actually never called out their name.
Yeah, I felt bad for not getting it. And then he told me, and I was like, oh, Jeff.
Well, that makes – now I can see the dividing line of what kind of hipster Benito is compared to you. So, yeah, I can see where he's going.
Well, it's great. I'm really enjoying it, and obviously – Erica is a incredible artist and
a massive talent. She's funny as hell. She comes up with some of the best visuals too. You know, it's like, she could write the thing, but she really wants somebody else to write for a while and just let her focus on her drawing.
Well, because as we all know, writing is the hard part.
Yeah, let's let everybody keep thinking that, because I'm fine with that. But yeah, she wants to improve herself as an artist, and you can tell just in the few weeks from where she started. It's like, it's an amazing. She just keeps jumping up and up and up.
Yeah, and there's things that happen in it that it just keeps building. Like that he doesn't have a shirt, so for his job interview, so he has to borrow a lady's shirt.
Yeah, he's wearing a blouse to the interview.
And not just that, but then he ends up going to jail wearing a woman's blouse.
That was a happy accident, too, because I totally forgot. Oh, yeah, he's still wearing a blouse. I think I'll point that out. And of course, he's resigned to the idea, like, oh, crap. I've always kind of imagined what would happen if I got thrown in jail. And he decides to just, be proactive about it. And just pulls his pants down and aims it at everybody and says, go for it.
Filth.
And again, it's something I don't do as much in the Thunderbolts or Hulk.
It's something that never quite made it into X-Men First Class.
It'd be a,
yeah,
that would be a
X-Men First Class or Atlas.
That would be a terrific scene with the Man-Thing, though. If the Man-Thing just did that.
For his first talking, he just suddenly said that.
He's been holding it out, holding it in all this time. And
go for it.
Oh, man. Well, Jeff, I think I've probably talked enough about Hulk in other places so that I don't quite have to bring it up again here. But again, I just want to, that book is obviously your Marvel 2-in-1 tribute, right? I'm right.
That first story is, yeah.
Although I did bring this up earlier. You talk about sort of being handed, Andy Diggle being handed the book after Warren Ellis's run. And you came in on Hulk after basically following up Jeff Loeb. There was the brief time in between when all the big Follow the Hulks stuff was going on. But as far as, actual runs on that book, it was, the Jeff Loeb, Ed McGuinness stuff, and then you came in. And a lot of what you did works as a direct response to stuff that Loeb did in his run in that first arc.
Like we're doing snaps or something.
Yeah, it's like really funny. And I have to admit, I'm not a big Jeff Loeb fan. I was not a big fan of the Jeff Loeb Hulk. But going back and sort of rereading it so that I could write about your run really actually made me like it a lot more.
Oh yeah, their kind of fearlessness and irreverence is what really makes it. They just come in and it is true. Red Hulk does come through and pawn everybody. That's kind of what happens. But you got to give it to Loeb and Ed. They were both like they were willing to kind of take it on the chin, knowing readers were going to get outraged, but that was also going to be the only thing that would make people have to check the book out. Because no matter what the readers say, whenever they say, no, I want this status quo, what they're saying is, I want it to remain the way it is in my fantasy, memory head, and so I don't have to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, but, that run is clearly, it's clearly trolling.
It's trolling pretty hard. I mean, it trolls really hard is what it does. So, yeah, then it kind of gave me this neat chance to, I'll set it up as like, okay, you can't get away with that sort of thing forever. For every input of energy, there has to be an expense. It's like, so Red Hulk is going to get some payback for all the assery he was doing back then. So, and that's kind of the whole point of the Scorched Earth thing. It's not to show that Red Hulk can beat everybody or anything. It's to show that he can take it. He comes through, everybody wails on him. But he doesn't bitch about it. He just sucks it up and acts like a good soldier. And that's where you start to respect him at that point.
Yeah, it really, it's not just, it works on a lot of levels. Because, for the people who are, like, super obsessed with well, the Hulk couldn't pick up Thor's hammer like that. You know, who they all have that voice, by the way. That's an accurate impression.
No, that was pretty good. It's accurate.
For those guys, you know, it works. It works as kind of the punchline to Loeb's setup, where, you know, it keeps building and building and building, and now you've got, you know, the actual consequences of that stuff.
Yeah, and then you get to show Thor kind of having fun at his expense.
Yeah, and then it also, you know, really kind of humanizes him and gets you to like him as a guy, which was really hard.
Yeah, you can't identify with people who just win all the time. It's certainly not my experience, and I don't think it's a lot of the readers, you know. It's like, but somebody who's like, okay, Red Hulk finally tries to obey the rules, and then he's still getting just bit on the ass. Then you can kind of go, okay, I sort of am like him, except he's red and muscular and stuff.
and can grow or lose a mustache at will.
Yeah. Somehow he doesn't have a mustache when he turns hulky.
What I love is no one freaks out that he can gain like a ton of muscle mass. It's like, where does that mustache go? That's the one that just everybody stews over. But the whole Scorched Earth storyline is that it's his payback, and at the same time it's him trying to kind of bumble his way into a new role in the Marvel Universe. And then with the 30.1, and from there on, now we start getting into his own stories, and he starts building his own cast and rogues gallery. He quits going around asking for everybody else's rogues, you know, gets his own. And that's what you meet the character 01, the naked woman with the waveform flowing over her body. That's kind of, I wanted a chance to like, okay, we're, when you've got a book where the hero of it really isn't that nice a guy, you've got an opportunity to do other neat things, like kind of show the growth of a supervillain and how they come about. And that's kind of what we're doing there with her and Jacob and Irfan and Black Fog, these characters who are about to show up all over the place.
All right. Well, Jeff, what do you say that we move on to a couple questions from our friends on the Twitter. First,
they ask questions for me.
Oh, we've got a lot. But first, we have a question for you, or rather, okay. Matt's Hat has a question for you.
Yes, yes.
Right.
It is a top hat. For those unfamiliar with this segment, I have a top hat. It is full of questions from either written by me or sent in by people on Twitter. They are directed at no one in particular, but Jeff, this question will be yours to answer. So here we go. Here's the question.
Okay.
Oh, and it's very appropriate for you. The question is, Hulk doesn't feel like smashing today. What does he do instead?
Really? That just happened to get to me?
That just came out of the hat? Serendipitous.
Gosh. I don't know why finger painting jumped into my head right then. It does seem like some kind of thing Hulk likes.
I imagine
I shouldn't go back to the barbecue well.
I imagine the finger painting being in one of those one-page backups, like the three, the green, the red, and the blue Hulk all doing finger painting.
Or it could be, you know, I think no matter what the storyline is or what the psyche of the Hulk is ever going to be, we always still revert to simple Hulk in the backs of our minds. And it's kind of like where he's sort of like a child, a petulant child. And it's like, Hulk just shows psychiatrists how Hulk feels with clay. You know, and then so he just gets busy with some of that psychiatric modeling clay. That's my answer.
All right. Well, our first question from Twitter comes from Power Listener, Max to the Max, who would like to know, Jeff Parker, what would you do, ideally, with a J. Jonah Jameson miniseries?
Wow. Oh, man. You know, now that kind of begs to be the Marvel 2-in-1 where J. Jonah's given some kind of power to go around and start enlisting heroes to do what the hell he says. That would be kind of sweet.
J. Jonah Jameson should have been the Red Hulk.
He easily could have been. He would have been an awesome Red Hulk. I think we've just given Dan Slott the next storyline over there. It's J. Jonah becomes Venom. But, you know...
I'm really actually surprised that we never got... last week on the show, we talked about Punish Arnage and how that amazingly managed to not happen during the 90s. Right. I'm kind of surprised that we never get to see a symbiote on J. Jonah Jameson. It's not too late.
Like, if we've thought of it, it's bound to happen. There's no way it can't happen. God, I love J. Jonah.
He is the best.
To me growing up, it was always, he's the character that screams my name all the time. So I'm like reading, I'm always reading comics where this one Hitler-looking character yells my name. So he's kind of pretty much burned into my psyche anyway.
Much like Dennis the Menace is burned into mine.
Well, yeah, Mr. Wilson.
Yeah.
That does explain why I always see you assaulting small blonde children.
It's
always
just
chasing them out of your garden.
It's just a reflex. I can't stop myself.
That Mitchell kid.
Our next question comes from a frequent questioner. I don't know if he's got power listener status just yet, but Magic Love Hose, who would like to know, does the Hulk leader conflict of smartest guy ever cannot beat dumbest guy ever have any subtext I need to know about?
Hey, I got to say, what's that Twitter listener's name?
Magic Love Hose.
He's pretty perceptive. Yeah, I'll just say, yeah, I think you read some subtext in there, and I'm going to give it to you. I'm not going to say anything about it, but I think he's pretty endemic of a lot of things. Smartest guy ever never beats strongest guy ever.
The big dumb brute.
Yeah.
Well, do you think that's honestly? Do you think that's sort of an element of the Hulk? That, because, you know, we all as comics readers, we're all kind of nerds. Like at best, we're kind of nerds. If you're me, you're like pretty much a lost cause. So you know, we all sort of identify with Peter Parker. You know, the science nerd who gets to be the cool guy, but he's still the science nerd. Right. And, you know, we always love Batman, the guy who's like, you know, well, I mean, I've already figured this problem out. You're just playing into my hand. But then there's the Hulk, who's the ultimate dumb jock, who just beats up smart people all the time.
Yeah, he's the whole, maybe your argument makes more sense, but shut up. Side of you. And also it kind of appeals to you as a lot of little kids get into the Hulk because they totally understand. It's like, I don't understand what Big Head is saying. I just want to smash. Kids can get that. You know, they totally understand what that means. That's why I don't think a smart Hulk ever lasts very long. Whatever. We've got a sweet thing going with the Red Hulk, whereas he's certainly not dumb. But at the same time, he is in this whole tough decisions got to be made. Somebody's got to get hit. Somebody's going to eat some fists. You know, it's that never fades away. It's always the front solution in his mind.
All right. Next question comes from our good friend, Comics Alliance's own David Wolkin, who would like to know, or he would like you to describe the perfect romantic evening for Wood God.
Well, first, you've been soothed by the voice of your father, who you're always screaming for. And then I guess you just stumble upon some extremely strong nymphs in the woods somewhere. Wood God is such a weird concept. It's like, I dare you to go back and look at those Marvel Comics Presents, read through it, and try to reverse engineer it. You can't do it without substance abuse is what you can't do. He's just so the idea that the next big thing was going to be this sadder, you know, of a guy who had incredible strength and screamed for his father. And if you ever try to read the thing that Roy Thomas wrote about the concept of scream, Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't.
Just Google that. Amazing. I cannot explain it. It is kind of amazing. Just Google that, the concept of Scream along with Wood God, and you'll come upon the page where they explained it in the back of Stanley's soapbox. And it is, or maybe it's not Stanley's soapbox. Maybe it's from Roy's magazine or something. But it's something to see.
All right. Next question comes from Marxakist, and I almost don't want to ask you this on the air because I want to see this answered in a comic. Who would win in a fight, the Incredible Hulk or the Incredible Hulk's weight in bees?
Oh, man. Bees. He had to break out a... Can I compromise and end up with the Hulk with a beard of bees at some point?
I would say that, like, that's, like... I know you said that Smart Hulk doesn't last very long, but I think Hulk with a bee beard would last forever.
Well, I guess I would just have to simply get that Spider-Man villain Swarm in there somehow. That ought to get us there, right? I don't know if you know about this character. It was a conglomerate.
Yeah, I know about Swarm.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to presume.
No, please go on for the benefit of our of those who are uninformed.
I don't know that I can explain Swarm. Again, back to Wikipedia with all of you. It's just this conglomerate mind that lives among a bunch of bees.
He's a sentient swarm of bees.
He's a Nazi.
Who is a Nazi, yes.
He's a Nazi scientist who transmitted...
Was he a Nazi?
Oh, yeah. He was a Nazi scientist who transmitted his consciousness into a swarm of bees. And now they're a swarm of bees shaped like a man wearing a cape. So they took.
I didn't know he was a Nazi.
Oh yeah, he's a Nazi. It's in Champions.
He could like team up with the Red Skull and stuff. That would be awesome.
They took the two scariest things: Nazis and bees.
And bees,
and put them together.
That is great.
The universe.
I'm sorry. Thanks for just making that even better.
I'm surprised he hasn't shown up in one of your comics yet.
Well, yet. It's only the clock is ticking now.
Next question comes from Power Listener Sean Hollinors, who says, what is the most contentious debate amongst Periscope studio members?
Oh, Sean knows what the most contentious debate is if he's asking that. We put everybody through this, and every new member has to weigh in on this. And it always turns out to be a bigger issue than they think it's going to be. It's who would win in a fight versus a caveman and a Shaolin monk. It's a really divisive thing. Wouldn't be surprised. We've got a whole room section devoted. Like the room I'm in is all caveman. As I sit back with Colleen Coover, Rich Ellis, Paul Tobin. Actually, I don't know where Jonathan Case stands on this. But generally, we all agree a caveman would just... ignore the martial arts and bite his face off.
So you're caveman in that argument.
I am clearly caveman. I don't think a caveman's going to be impressed with your sweet technique.
All right, this listener question comes from at the ISB on Twitter, who wants to know, Jeff Parker, why are you so wrong on the caveman versus Shaolin monk issue?
Who asked that?
That was at the ISB. I hear he's a really cool dude. Matt, where do you stand on that?
It's a very, very tough question.
Don't just spit out an answer. Think about it for a while.
Yeah, I mean,
there's no question for me.
It takes deep consideration, I think.
You know where it's been solved in movies in the oddest of places.
Where's that?
At the beginning. One of the things we always like to cite is the only good part about this movie, but the opening scene of the X-Files movie, where I can hear my daughter crying really hard about something in the background, but it's bedtime. In the opening scene of the X-Files movie, you know, they show a zillion years ago when aliens come down and they get in a fight with a caveman, with these two cavemen. And the fact that the cavemen actually run down into the hole after the aliens to keep pursuing it, it's like, yeah, that's what we came from. We're this kind of sad animal now that's sort of that's sort of pathetic and needs to everybody to pay attention to our allergies and have seatbelts and stuff. But we used to be the badasses. And, that's why I always lean towards cavemen.
I'm pro Shaolin all the way.
Of course you are. I wouldn't expect you to not be pro Shaolin.
Because I'm a believer in technique. I'm a believer in not just the power of brute strength. I like Batman more than I like the Hulk. What can I say?
This is why I write the Hulk, Chris.
One final question from Twitter. This one comes from Phil Tackman on Twitter. I think it's a very interesting question.
Okay.
Is the Red Hulk or Ken Hale more likely to say something well-intentioned but blatantly racist like that uncle everyone has since they are both old?
I would say the Red Hulk, because Ken's been around longer in our continuity, and I think he got all that out of his system by the end of the 60s. And now he knows what he can say and what he can't say. You know, he's kind of come to this enlightenment sort of thing. Also, we play up the fact that Ken is always perpetually stuck at about 35, so he's always into whatever a 35-year-old might be into. You know, so he doesn't actually think like an old man. He kind of thinks like this dude who's always kind of on the verge of middle age but never allowed to get there. Thanks to his immortal ape physiology.
Well, I think another part of this is that Thunderbolt Ross at this point is in a Hulk Like Me story.
Oh, nice!
Like thanks, he
Matt.
Was.
That's really.
He was the Hulksist guy. He hated.
He was very Hulksist.
Very Hulksist, and now he has been, you know, put into a Hulk's body, and now he's learning all these lessons.
It's almost, too, a Rosie Greer, Ray Milan, two-headed man sort of situation.
Yeah.
Oh, man. If
that's what the one Ed and I did, the Hulk 30 issue, kind of really was that.
Yeah.
If the next trade is not called Hulk Like Me, then I don't want it, Jeff. I don't want it.
Do you know what I was going to – I kept trying to call it? It's the first trade is called Hulk Hunted. Actually, it's not the first trade. That's called Scorched Earth. But the second trade will be called Hulk Hunted. But my working title the entire time was The Hunt for Red Hulktober.
And that is why we love you, Jeff Parker.
Yeah, and the story within what we're getting into, where beginning with the barbecue scene that we covered so thoroughly. That's where I keep referring to it, and I had to go back and take out my fake title because I always do this. I put in a title that's just a holding place, and then I forget I wrote a holding place title. And then Ed Dukcher will letter it, and then I see this thing glaring at me. And it's like, no, I really wasn't going to call this No Country for Old Hulks, but I really do like that name.
That's a great title.
Why wouldn't you call it that?
I don't know, really, because it's a great name. Is, you know, I was like, God, I kind of hate to lose that. But, you know, this one thing, I can't bite too much off of other stuff. But this whole arc is the No Country for Old Hulks arc anyway.
Well, Jeff Parker, thank you so much for coming back on the show and talking to us.
Yes. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Suddenly drawing a blank.
Obviously, buckocomic.com.
Yes, that's free. That's twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can go and pay nothing and be just massively entertained or get mad and yell at me on Twitter, at Jeff Parker on Twitter. And of course, we've got Hulk and Thunderbolt just coming out like almost twice a month now. So if you can pick up any of those, that'd be awesome.
That is that's Hulk from Marvel Comics, not to be confused with Incredible Hulks,
not Incredible
which is written
Hulk,
by friend of the show, Greg Pak, which is also highly entertaining.
Highly entertaining, and Greg did something I was so jealous of not too long ago where, you know, I had some backups with A-Bomb, who was formerly Rick Jones, and Greg put in a great part where A-Bomb comes running out on a jetpack and says, "Jetpacks, fools!" And I was like, damn it! I was like, that's exactly the kind of thing I would have had him say, and you beat me to it. Oh, it makes me so mad. Can't stand it.
Both of those excellent comics, as well as Thunderbolts, out monthly from Marvel. And Mysteriously Unfathomable, we here at Walking Digix, big fans, available in trade and digitally through Comixology.
Yes, yes.
Oh, that's right. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you so much for coming on the show. Again, you are one of the guys who was welcome back anytime. That you would like to come back and talk to us about whatever it is you're writing, because they're always, always absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much.
I'll be your Beverly D'Angelo, if that's what you want me to be. Where you didn't even get the reference, but Chevy Chase had a talk show for a while. And he kept guests kept crapping out on him once they realized his show wasn't doing that well. And he had to keep asking Beverly D'Angelo to come on, his co-star from the Vacation movies.
I don't even know how to respond to that, but yes, you're welcome to be our Beverly D'Angelo.
Yeah.
I've never said that to another man, but I mean it.
All right. We will reach into our mailbag and answer a listener question. This one is from Aleph Craven. I hope I'm saying your first name right. It might be Aleph. Either way. He asked us a question about something that we actually talked about a few weeks ago on the show. He says, on that episode of the podcast, the crew of Ajax was referred to as Ajaxians, while I, for my own part, had always thought of you all as War Rocketeers. Which would you consider to be the more appropriate nickname? Are there still better ones you might suggest? Ajax's Rocket Warriors, perhaps, the Minions of Ming, the Body Bringers, or would it simply be the crew of Ajax? I will say that pretty much ever since even Huge was on this show, we've kind of been the Ajax crew, and I've always, if anybody was going to be War Rocketeers, I think that would be the listeners.
I gotta say, like, I like Body Bringers. I think that is hilarious.
But again, I would think the Body Bringers would be the listeners, not us.
I gotta say, like, I'm like you. I've always sort of thought of us as the Ajax crew.
Ajaxians, I believe, came from another listener question. Somebody called us possible. Ajaxians. Yeah.
I think probably just the crew of War Rocket Ajax, or the War Rocket Ajax crew, the Ajax crew, is what we would refer to ourselves. But I mean, really, you know, you can address us however you would like in your listener questions, but I think that's kind of what we think of ourselves as.
Yeah. And then for the listeners, I think War Rocketeers or Body Bringers might be more appropriate. However,
only we could call them Hawkmen.
Hawkmen. I also like the Minions of Ming. I think that's pretty good.
That one's really good, but that should only be used for listeners of an episode when we have Ming Doyle on the show again.
We will reach out to all of you. What do you guys think you ought to be called?
Yeah, send in your suggestions or leave a comment at warrocketajax.com.
And what do you think Chris and I and... anybody else who would be considered a part of the Ajax crew, what do you think would be the best name for us too?
That is a good challenge for our listeners. Yes. The one comment section I'm still reading.
Feel good about that, guys.
You can, of course, leave those comments at warrocketajax.com. You can also leave us iTunes reviews, which do help people find the show, as Tom Caters is so fond of saying. That's yes. Right. Reference to another podcaster.
Oh, no. The listener question you just heard came into warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Please, by all means, send your listener questions to that email address. I should say, though, that we generally tend to take answer questions that are not comics related on the air. That is in part because Chris answers lots of comics related questions in his weekly column for Comics Alliance called Ask Chris. But, you know, as always, send any question you feel is appropriate to warrocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Pro wrestling questions, a specialty.
Yes, and yes. Barbecue questions, also.
Matt, where can everyone find you out there on this wonderful world wide web of ours?
I'm on Twitter at HighMindedMW. You can also follow the Twitter account I run that is full of jokes about online etiquette. It is called Fake E-Etiquette. It has three E's all in a row in the middle there. Also, a lot of my work, the editing I do, goes into the website, thecontentfarm.net. You can also find that on Twitter at thecontentfarm. I think that's pretty much all the places you can find me. Chris, where can people find you all over the internet?
Everyone can find me at the-isb.com, which is my website, and where I got my Twitter name, which is twitter.com/THEISB. I also have a Tumblr that I'm updating fairly frequently, just with, you know, images that I see and like and links to stuff that I write, which you can find at 20%cooler.tumblr.com. That's 20 spelled out, and Tumblr has no E, because that's how things are on the internet these days. You can also check out my webcomic at awesomehospital.com and some other comics that I've written at actionagecomics.com. And of course, the number one comic book website in the United States of America, comicsalliance.com, for all the best in comic book news, opinions, features, humor, and pictures of cool art that we see and like the paintings of Quentin Tarantino's movies that have very, very little to do with comics, but are awesome, and we like them, and so will you. And I believe that is it. Also, you can, of course, follow Huge Warrock, former host of the show, Eugene Ahn, a.k.a. rapper Adam Warrock. That's E-U-G-E-W-A-R-R-O-C-K.
He does our theme music.
He does our theme music. Rusty Shackles is Rusty_Shackles. He did art for the site for a very long time and the header image on the site.
Yep.
Former show artist Max Huffman, MAX HUFFMAN, has great comics out there as well. You can also find links to other stuff that we like on warrocketajax.com. And I think that is everybody we need to talk about.
Yeah, I think that takes care of us. Wraps up this episode of War Rocket Ajax number 62.
That's it, everybody. I'm going to do some WrestleMania predictions. So now, when you hear this, it will have already happened. But I'm going to do some predictions on my blog before WrestleMania, so go and see if I was right in my understanding of the world of sports entertainment.
I'm sure people will be placing bets based on your predictions, Chris.
I actually have a bad habit of placing bets on pro wrestling, which I probably should not do. And with that, have a good week, everybody. Ajax out. Yeah! Flash.